Hey everybody, welcome to another Baseball America Prospects podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer, joined today by Mike DiGiovanna, longtime LA Times sports writer. Mike was the Angels beat writer for years and years and years. He's been our Angels correspondent for quite a while as well. And Mike handled the prospect handbook chapter of the Angels for the second year in a row here. Mike, when you wrote it last year, there was some interesting guys who had just been drafted or had yet to really play. And, you know, it was interesting, but it wasn't a great system. Fast forward to this year, you had some really interesting guys to write up who had proven a lot more. Just take us through what you thought maybe the biggest differences between the Angels system at this time last year and to this time this year.
I think if you were to sum it up in one word, it is athleticism. That was a really huge emphasis of new GM Billy Epler and even newer scouting director Matt Swanson. When they came aboard, you know, the Angel system for quite a while, at least for the first 5, 6, 7 years of this decade, maybe going into the first decade of the century, really focused on more guys who are more big league ready, you know, college drafts, maybe guys with more big league ready when they were drafted, but with lower ceilings. And I think you see a huge shift in their philosophy with the drafting of guys like Joe Adell, Jordan Adams, really high-end high school athletes with really broad tool sets and higher ceilings. You know, now you don't hit on all these guys, obviously, but I think their philosophy is when you do hit on these guys, you usually hit big. So, and yeah, Jeremiah Jackson, the shortstop they drafted to that mix this year. Griffin Canning, a really physical pitcher. You know, they just seem to have some higher ceiling guys in the top 10. Brandon Marsh, another guy. You know, I think he was maybe the guy you were alluding to earlier. One of those guys who didn't perform that much in the first year and really is emerging now as a pretty good prospect. So, a lot more depth from an athlete standpoint, and I think a lot more optimism, you know, from a farm system standpoint for this club.
Yeah, I had seen their affiliate at Inland Empire pretty much every year now, dating back to 2011. And at the start of that range in 2011, you had like Randall Grichuk and CJ Crone. So there were some guys there, but by 2013, it was dead. I mean, those Inland Empire teams at High A from 2013 to 2016 or so were just lacking in talent in almost every avenue imaginable. Then you started to see it get a little bit better last year, but this year, I mean, it's just night and day, and it's been really interesting to see that talent differential, and you fast forward 2 years and might look that way in the majors. Joe Adell, you mentioned, was one of these guys that was drafted off his supreme athleticism. First round pick last year, number 10 overall. And at the time, he had struggled a little bit on the showcase circuit to hit. He really stepped up his senior year, but he wasn't playing the greatest high school competition. So not all teams were really convicted on his ability to hit. Well, not only does he go out and rake right away after he signs and gets onto the BA Top 100, his first full season, he climbs to AA, a year removed from high school, hits for power, shows speed. So there was both athleticism as well as a maturity and a polish in his approach, his at-bats. I mean, this is a consensus top 20 prospect in baseball now. Just in your discussions with people within the system and outside the system, what types of things were they saying about Joe Adell and what he can be to the Angels franchise?
I think you hit the nail right on the head there. I think the biggest reason for his huge step forward this year was mixing that approach and the mental aspect of the game and that maturity with the tool set that was already there. I mean, every coach and scout I talked to, and I'm sure you're hearing the same, raved this season about his ability to make adjustments at the plate, his just his ability to take coaching and to put things that coaches are telling him into play, his preparation from a scouting standpoint, starting to learn how pitchers are going to approach him. And this is a 19-year-old playing at AA, and his numbers were pretty good across the board this season. you know, that's a pretty big step. That's a pretty, you know, no matter how good a prospect you are, unless maybe you're Mike Trout, you're not going to go to Double A as a 19-year-old and compete and hang with that group as well as a guy like Joe Adell did. And I think a lot of that has to do with his approach and some of those, you know, mental abilities catching up pretty quickly with his physical ones. And I think, you know, this is a guy who, when they drafted him, you know, Swanson said he thinks they drafted a potential franchise player. Now, that's a pretty lofty expectation to put on a kid. You know, when I think of franchise players, you think of a guy like Mike Trout, Albert Pujols in his prime. I don't know that he'll get to that level, but I thought, you know, looking at this kid last year, you know, looking at the timeline, looking at the ability, that maybe he would be the guy who would replace Trout if Trout leaves as a free agent after 2020. But I think at this point, there's no reason to think he can't be playing alongside Trout in the year 2020.
Absolutely. And there is some swing and miss there, and I talked to him a little bit this summer. Look, he very much has a do damage approach. He's going to go up there and swing hard, but it's not undisciplined. One of the things that really stood out to me, he talked about he keeps a notebook of every pitcher he faces, writing down what they did to him, what he saw, so he can have a little bit of a better base of expectation the next time he goes up to face that pitcher. When I came back from seeing him in Inland Empire this year, I did two things. The first thing I did was the first game I watched him, I sent, we have a Slack message out amongst our group at BA. A couple at-bats in, I Slacked our guys, guys, Joe Adell is holy expletive good. This guy is really, really, really good, and it didn't take very long to see. And then as I talked to him more and got to know him, as you alluded to at the maturity, the best way I can describe it is nothing about him is 19. His physicality, his skills, just his mental approach, just a great guy all around, you know, he gets it in every aspect. And I think for me, you know, it didn't take long to see what Matt Swanson was alluding to with this is a potential franchise player, and not just what he can do on the field. This is the type of guy that his fans are going to love, the way he interacts with them, signing autographs, you know, face on the billboard. It's a lot of expectations to put on a kid, but I think he's one of the few teenagers in the world where you see both the physical ability and the personality to potentially handle that.
It's funny, as you're saying all this, you couldn't have described Mike Trout better to a T from the time he was drafted, signed, came up to his first big league camp, you know, had his first big league call up at 19. The humility combined with maturity and physical ability, it's a rare combination. And once again, I don't want to, you know, label this kid as the next Mike Trout, but he appears to have the all-around ability to be an impact player in the big leagues, and to get that in the draft and to have that kind of player in your system for, you know, guaranteed 6 years in the big leagues at a reasonable price. It's just, there's such a value to that right now, and there always has been in the big leagues, because, you know, Mike Trout now obviously is one of the highest paid players in the game, but for 3 to 4 years you had a guy of that talent at a really reasonable, you know, salary. It allows teams to spread resources elsewhere, and it keeps that sort of the talent funneling through the system. You know, it gives prospects, you know, gives them the hope that, you know, they can follow in their footsteps. So, you know, Joe has a great role model in front of him, Mike Trout. I'm pretty sure he'll be in his first big league camp here in short time, and we'll have a guy like Trout to sort of mentor him. So it's a great guy to have around, and a great, you know, example to follow. So I agree with you. You know, he has a real chance to be a star in this game, and the Angels are lucky to have him at this point.
Absolutely. I don't want to throw Mike Trout on anybody, because Mike Trout is the greatest player we have seen since Mickey Mantle, or, you know, Willie Mays, Mickey Mantle-esque. So I don't want to put that on Adell. And I, as much as I respect the kid's talent, I don't think it's fair to put that on anyone. But you're right. You know, that perennial all-star, middle-of-the-order outfielder, whether that's Vernon Wells, Justin Upton, Torrey Hunter. There's different versions of that comp that people have thrown on him. I do think, you know, might ultimately be more corner outfield, but he can play center. So we'll see how everything develops. But either way, the Angels have a very, very special talent in Joe Adell. He was the easy number pick for number one in this system. Once you got to number two, there were a couple of other guys. Jamai Jones has held that spot in the past. Brandon Marsh and Griffin Canning both, you know, had successful seasons. Mm-hmm. Marsh's overall numbers at high A don't look great, but if you throw out a two-week adjustment period to begin it, it's actually pretty respectable numbers. How many guys would you say were really in the mix for that number two spot?
I think Canning for me was an easier number two, just because he's so close to the big leagues, and I think the final polish will come here. I think we're going to see him in Anaheim at some point this year. So to me, he jumped up there, and that was sort of combined with the fact that Jones really struggled at the plate for a lot of the year while, you know, adjusting to a really radical position switch from the outfield to second base. And I do think toward the end of the year, he started hitting better in a nice fall league as well. So I think you'll see a bounce back year from Jam. And Marsh is a real interesting guy for me because, you know, you hear scouts talk about his defense like he could play in the big leagues right now. You know, they say he's a better defender than Joe Adell, has a better arm, more accurate, better speed in the outfield, more instincts, runs better routes, and that's all great. But until the bat starts to catch up with that, you know, he's still pretty raw for me. So I sort of went with the guy with a little more polish, a little closer to the big leagues, and Canning. And, you know, I look at Griffin's repertoire, and a lot of people throw out that Trevor Bauer comp, and there are worse guys to be compared to. But physically, he's still growing into his body a bit, but he's throwing in the mid-90s with three secondary pitches that are all, you know, considered above average. So, once again, you just cannot stress the importance of really good young pitching to have at your ready on the big league level, and he's going to help pretty soon. And when you look at the history of injuries in the Angels rotation, it's a pretty safe bet that he'll be in Anaheim at some point pretty soon.
Especially, you mentioned Garrett Richards, who wasn't going to be part of the equation anyway, having Tommy John, but he leaves as a free agent. Matt Shoemaker was non-tendered. Canning, again, was another guy I saw at Inland Empire, the opener for the season. And, you know, in college, it was 90-94. They sat him out at the end of last season, really worked on his core strength, and he comes back. And I didn't see a fastball slower than 93. He touched 98. He sat 4-6. And speaking with the evaluators, he was able to hold it most of the year. There was a start or two where it was down a tick or two, but for the most part, even as he bounded all the way up from high to double A to triple A in his first professional season, the stuff stayed, plus curveball, sliders above average, and the changeup, it's interesting because he didn't use it a whole lot and he kind of tinkered with different grips, but by the end of the season, he found one and started throwing it better. All of a sudden, you're talking about two pluses and above average, another pitch that's on the come and getting better with fearlessness, competitiveness. It checks a lot of boxes, and you mentioned the Angels needing young pitching. As you know, Mike, they didn't have young pitching to go down and get for years and years and years. You saw them bargain binning, you know, Tim Lincecums of the world. We all remember Matt Palmer. I mean, finding, you know, these guys who were older off the scrap heap, and if they worked, great. If not, you know, that they didn't have anything else to go to. We saw last year they were able to dip down and go get Jaime Barria. Now this coming year, potentially Canning and Suarez, I do feel like the Angels, for the first time almost this decade, have a reserve of young quality arms they can go down and get.
Yeah, that's one thing to keep in mind with Canning specifically. You might see a Walker Buehler situation arise with him. You know, they did slow play him that first year. He didn't pitch at all right after his draft for good reason. You know, he'd come into the draft with some medical issues, and he had a pretty heavy workload his last year at UCLA. So they monitored his innings and all that. And I'd be surprised if they pushed him anything beyond 150 innings this year. So it'll be interesting with him to see how they sort of play him early in the season, see if they try to, you know, schedule in some two-week breaks for him just so they can have him in the second half at the big league level if needed. So that's a really important thing for him. And you mentioned Suarez. You know, he's an interesting guy just because you look at the body and, you know, he's certainly, what is he, about 5'10", 180 or something.
And I think that's generous. I think it might be more 5'9", 210. He's plump, but the stuff is real.
Yeah, so it's really interesting to see a guy like that and to see him pitch the way he does, you know, low to mid-90s pretty consistently. And he has a really good changeup. So when you're throwing that kind of velocity from the left side with a good changeup, it's just something you don't see all that often. So he could be a factor. You know, Jaime Barria, you know, Felix Pena came out of nowhere last year, another pretty good young arm. So, yeah, you're right. I think it does look like they at least have some reinforcements who could be ready this year when called upon. And really, when you look at it, you know, Andrew Heaney, Tyler Skaggs, they still have some pretty good young pitchers who need to stay healthy for this team to compete at the big league level. So, but definitely depth is looking a lot better along those lines.
You mentioned Marsh and Suarez. Marsh, obviously, you know, he's still, you know, in his early 20s, going to jump up to double A next year. The bat has some questions, but it's a great athlete. Suarez, you hit on, is another lefty who at 20 years old rose three levels all the way to triple A and really held his own up there. Those four, I think, were pretty clearly the top four. You move into that next tier. Jamai Jones, Luis Rengifo, Matt Theis, all very different players with different pedigrees and different histories. What, at the end of the day, had Jam still kind of that number five spot when you have Rengifo, who, you know, on paper performed better, Theis, who got to AAA, showed a little more power. What were some of the things you heard about Jamai Jones that still gave confidence he should be in this spot despite a down season?
Certainly the instructors in the Angel system, the guys who work with him every day, are still very high on him. They love his work ethic. They love his willingness to switch positions. And, you know, Mike Gallegos said he thought he could make the switch after hitting him like one ground ball last spring. You know, he played a little infield in high school, but it's obviously a lot different at this level. He struggled with certain plays, still needs some work in the pivot. But they saw the progress throughout the year, and I think you kind of have to give him a little bit of a pass offensively. You know, his numbers across the board really took a dip this year, but, you know, he put a lot of focus and a lot of energy on his defense, and I think by the end of the season, most scouts thought he'd at least be serviceable at second base, and he's still only a double A, so he's got room to grow. It'll be really interesting to see if he has a really strong bounce back year at second. I mean, with the bat this year, I think him and Rengifo are sort of really on a collision course to compete for that second base job at the big league level in 2020. And you mentioned Rengifo, really. I'm not sure there's a guy who took a bigger leap forward in the system this year. A guy they traded for C.J. Cronin last spring. I don't want to say he came out of nowhere, but he wasn't even in the Rays top 30, if my memory serves.
No, that's correct. He was not on anyone's radar like this.
Yeah. So switch hitter with some really good bat-to-ball skills. I mean, they still think Theis has the best plate discipline in the system, but this guy is probably a very, very close second. You know, his walks are almost, I think they're equal with his strikeouts. He really knows how to work in that bat and from both sides of the plate. His defense from, you know, both middle infield positions is solid, decent speed, you know, not a burner, but certainly maybe average to above average. So, you know, if you can hit somewhere around 300 and get on base somewhere near 400, they're going to find a place for you in the lineup. So at the very least, I think he'll be a really solid big league utility player if Jones ends up maybe being the second baseman in the future. But they got a pretty good player. For a player to be named later, he is a pretty good talent. And I think you mentioned Tice. I think he hit that one accurately. His power really took a leap forward this year. I know he made some adjustments with his swing, trying to get a little more leverage and a little more lift. And I know that can be a dangerous thing sometimes for a young hitter, but he's on base and his plate discipline didn't seem to suffer while his homers almost doubled this year. And I think defensively, he moved to first base right after being drafted, and I think he's made so much progress there that they think of him now as a pretty decent defender. So obviously the big thing with him is what's in front of him. Albert Pujols still has 3 years left in that contract, so but he also struggles to stay healthy. So with a guy like Tice, I can certainly see him in the big leagues at some point this year. At the very least, maybe some kind of platoon role at first base. It's going to be tough to get DH at bats with Otani, pretty much locked into that spot all season. So his future really could hinge on Albert Pujols' health. And if we know anything about Albert's health, there's going to be a pretty good chance there's going to be a need for another first baseman at some point. So I think he's on the cusp for sure.
Yeah, Theis is someone that pretty consistently now for a couple of years, people have seen a big leaguer with him. It's just very much he's okay. Kind of that, second division, decent average, get on base, maybe some home runs, but nothing that is an, oh my gosh, we have to keep this guy. But you're right, I do expect him to get his chance this year. And going back to Renkifo, one of the best quotes I got all year was someone in the Angels front office likened what happened with Renkifo to finding gold. Even the Angels did not expect this, they saw a guy who, switch hitter, middle infielder, started to show a little bit of pop last year in low A, but no one saw this. This was a breakout year. You're right, that collision course with him and Jones will be interesting. One of the things I noticed about Jamai, I went in April and saw him. Then I saw him again in June, and he had a completely different setup in terms of his bat placement, just where he was placing it. Then I went again and saw him in October in the Fall League, and he was placing it yet somewhere else. So 3 different months, you see 3 different kind of setups. And that last month, it was actually early November, in the Fall League, that was the best he looked in terms of getting the bat through the zone, driving the ball. So you hope that maybe he figured something out in November and got back to what he looked like last year, which was this explosive, high contact, gap to gap, line it in there and race around the bases. I do expect that when all's said and done, Jamai will be better than what he showed last year, but, it has to happen. We established these were pretty much the 5, 6, 7, and into that 8, 9 range. The one guy in the top 10 who maybe was a little unconventional was Ty Buttrey. You don't normally see 26-year-old relievers in the top 10 of a solid system, but Buttrey came up and really showed some explosive stuff, kind of a late bloomer type. What did you see from him, and what were some of your discussions surrounding him that, ended up getting him into the top 10 of this system?
Yeah, he was a tough one because you're right. At his age, you don't necessarily think of him so much as a quote-unquote prospect. But he did fit the criteria in terms of not having pitched, enough big league innings to qualify to, not make the prospect handbook. And what I saw was a guy who at times was dominant against big league competition. And I just don't think you can discount that. Guys have ceilings, guys have potential. And I've seen plenty of guys come up to the big leagues with all those things and not perform. He was touching 100 at times with fastball, and he was consistently 97, 98. He came into the system and left the Red Sox system with some pretty big questions about his command, but his numbers and his control was really good. He's got a really sharp slider that can induce some ground balls, and he really started to throw this changeup that really kind of look more like a split-fingered fastball. So, you know, when you have big league, you know, successful big leaguers kind of raving about your stuff, to me that says something. And I just think those kinds of power arms don't come around too often. A big guy kind of, you know, physically imposing on the mound, and, you know, he's had a pretty decent health record. So I do think he's going to be a guy who will enter spring training as an arm that has a pretty good chance of being one of their back-end relievers. You know, to me, he jumped way ahead of Cam Bedrosian. They let Blake Parker go, so there's going to be a need for at the very least, a setup guy. You know, and they don't really have a closer with Keegan Middleton still hurt. So, you know, he could enter next season as their closer, and to me, that warrants a top 10 prospect in my mind.
No, I think that's fair. You mentioned, you know, it's real, real stuff. Sit 96, 97, touch, you know, 100. And one of the things that I thought was interesting was his slider. You mentioned that sharp slider. That was considered, you know, his third pitch, not the best offering in the world, kind of as he was coming up as a prospect. We got to the majors and clearly something clicked there. It was a swing and miss pitch. It was an effective outing. So now you're talking about 96 to 100 with an outpitch slider. You know, physical, that's a development. You mentioned the control hadn't been great in his past, but he's an ex-starter, moved to relief, and kind of figured it out there. Again, I think that there are some interesting guys in the system, but you're right, you know, ceiling, potential. At the end of the day, a guy who has a chance to be closing, you know, big league games probably here in the next year or so, it is a fair warranting. Overall, we have this top 10. How many guys would you say were slam dunks to be in the top 10, and how many spots were kind of, you know, up for debate as you were going through this process?
Certainly Adele and Canning, Marsh, so that's three, Suarez four, you know, Jam because of his year could have slipped out, Rendifo, you know, a lot of guys have him as a utility guy. I guess he could have slipped out. But I think, you know, Jordan Adams, another guy, this year's draft is just so raw and so fresh, you know. I guess he can't be really considered a slam dunk at this point. I guess four or five, and I guess Tice, just because of his polish and his success and as close as he is to the big leagues, to be would be a slam dunk. I think, you know, the overall importance, I think, here to note is, you know, this system has really improved over the last couple of years. I think they were dead last in your rankings not too long ago, you know,
2 years ago.
And now, you know, they're pretty much in the middle to upper middle of the pack in Baseball America and other people's rankings. And you know, it's funny you mentioned Buttrey, and you have to give some credit to Billy Epler and some of his evaluators. You know, they traded two guys, and Ian Kinsler and Martin Maldonado, who are going to be free agents. You got Ty Buttrey and Williams Drez, who is also in the top 30, a pretty high potential left-handed arm out of the bullpen. And Patrick Sandoval from the Astros, who I had, I think, in the middle of my top 30, who could be back-end rotation starter, maybe a multi-inning left-hand reliever, who also had a really good year. So, you know, you're talking about getting three prospects who could make the big leagues here in the next 2 years for three guys who, you know, were in their walk years on a team that was out of contention. So, you know, kudos to the Angels for making those kinds of deals. And, you know, we may end up seeing Martin Maldonado back in an Angels uniform here in free agency. So those are the kind of deals you need to make at certain times. They're tough sometimes from a fan perspective when you do raise that white flag, but I think they were smart to make them and get the guys they got, because some of these guys are going to have some impact moving forward.
Absolutely, and without giving too much away, another thing that jumped out to me just when you look at the Angels' top 30 is they've hit on some really interesting late-round guys in the sense, you know, Jeremy Beasley was a 30th rounder, senior sign, and He really opened some eyes this year, climbed up to Double A in his first full year and was very successful. Jose Rojas, a 36th rounder from Vanguard just down the street from Angel Stadium, really did some good things this year getting up to Triple A. Jack Kruger, catcher, was a 20th rounder. It's interesting because we talk about the Angels finding that athleticism early in the draft, but you mentioned it goes beyond just hitting, okay, we hit on this first-round pick and that first-round pick. While that goes a long way, making those trades to find, you know, quality big leaguers, and then on top of that, hitting on the late-round picks, it's not just a system, I feel like, at least, that's, you know, super top-heavy and then there's this massive drop-off. I think you could go 20, 23, 24 deep in this system and find guys who have something you could say, this is a guy I can see contributing. Now, obviously, not all of them will when all's said and done, but there's legitimate talent here down into the 20s in this system, which, again, I don't think is something that has been true of any Angels system since about 2011, 2012, 2013 at the absolute, you know, earliest.
Yeah, I think the one guy that sort of jumps out to me when you, as you're saying this, and it sort of speaks to the progress of the system, is Leonardo Rivas, a pretty good middle infielder in the lower levels. I think I had him at like 11 or 12 or 13 last year, and he dropped to the back end of the top 30. And I asked Mike, I think it was Chad Tracy, the guy, he goes, man, did this guy really struggle with him? I said, no, he actually had a pretty good year. I just think the system's that much better, and we have players who jumped ahead of him a little bit. So that speaks to the strength of the system overall. And I think the other thing we're seeing is when they finally got out from the restrictions caused by that Roberto Baldacchini signing, they've started to spend some more money in Latin America. And, you know, sign these two kids in the Bahamas, Deshaun Knowles and Trent DeVoe, and guys are really raving about Knowles, who jumped ahead of DeVoe this year and has a really athletic, physical specimen in center. And, you know, Adrian Almeida, guys like that, Orlando Martinez from the Dominican, I believe. You know, there's just some, I don't know if any of these guys are going to pan out, you know, to be superstars, but or even big leaguers. But you know, they weren't signing these kinds of guys for a good solid 2 or 3 years. So I think that has added some depth to the system as well.
Absolutely, it's definitely been an interesting last 2-3 years in terms of the Angels bringing more talent in. We'll see if it pays off in the big leagues here before Mike Trout's contract runs out. No, that's the timeline Angels fans are nervously tapping their fingers over. But Mike, thank you so much again for all your hard work and jumping on the podcast with me.
It was a pleasure, Kyle.
All right, folks, that'll do it for this Baseball America Prospects podcast. For Mike Diagiovanna, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thanks for listening.